The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, welcome to a Friday. Yes, it's finally Friday. And the impeachment trial is still going on. Just to let you bring you up to speed what's going on, they the defense, for what it's worth, gave their defense today instead of using any of the 18 hours they had at their disposal. They used about 2.5, and now they're on to the question and answer session. So let's just go to it and hear what they have to say. All right, I guess so. What the way it works is the senators submit their questions to the bench and in writing. The clerk reads them, and then whoever they ask the question of.
Senator from Vermont, Senator Sanders has a question.
Here you go. So, here you go.
Both the
Bernie Sanders for
counsel
both
for the former president and House manager. The clerk will read it, and following our procedure, the House managers will go first.
Okay, so that's how it works.
The House prosecutors have stated over and over again that President Trump was perpetrating a big lie when he repeatedly claimed that the election was stolen from him and that he actually won the election by a landslide.
Yeah, right.
Are the prosecutors right when they claim that Trump was telling a big lie, or in your judgment, did Trump actually win the election?
Ooh, good question from Bernie.
Managers have up to 2.5 minutes.
Okay, so the House managers get to answer first. It looks like who's going up to answer? They're deciding which one. Well, Jamie Raskin standing up, but it looks like Stacey Plaskett again. Boy, she's turning out to be the breakout star of this session. Stacey Plaskett of the U.S. Virgin Islands, she's only a delegate to Congress. She's not a full-blown congressperson because she doesn't have a vote. But she's good.
As we all know, President Trump did lose the election by 7 million votes.
Yeah.
306 electoral votes. By the time of the January 6 attack, the courts, the Justice Department, all 50 states across the country had done, agreed that the votes were counted. The people had spoken, and it was time for the peaceful transfer of power.
Go figure.
As our Constitution and the rule of law demands. 61 courts the president went to. That's fine, appropriate. He lost. He lost the election.
Yep.
He lost the court case. As Leader McConnell recognized the day after the electors certified the votes on December 14th, he said, quote, many millions of us had hoped that the presidential election would yield a different result. But our
system only have 2 minutes here, Stacey.
Has processes to determine who will be sworn in on January 20th. The Electoral College has spoken.
They knew. Patriots. They know he lost. Okay.
Sometimes there is a reason to dispute an election. Sometimes the count is close. Sometimes we ask for a recount, go to courts. All of that's appropriate. I lost my first election. I stayed in bed for 3 days. We do what we need to do, and we move on.
Good for her.
This was not that.
No.
Because
this was
when
not
all
that.
Of these people confirmed that Donald Trump had lost, when the courts, his Department of Justice, state officials, Congress, his vice president were ready to commit to the peaceful transfer of power, the peaceful transfer of power, Donald Trump was not ready. And so we are all here because he was not ready. Day after day, he told his supporters false, outlandish claims of why this election was rigged. Now, let's be clear. President Trump had absolutely no support of these claims. But that wasn't the point of what he was doing. He did it to make his supporters frustrated, to make them angry.
Yeah, her time's up. This was not her finest moment, I got to say.
Time has expired.
Now the other side is 2.5 minutes to tell us
and counsel for the
what they believe.
Recognized for 2.5 minutes.
Did Trump win?
Read again and not have it count to my time.
Of course. The clerk will read the question again.
For the third time, because this guy needs the question repeated every time.
The House prosecutors have stated over and over again that President Trump was perpetrating a big lie when he repeatedly claimed that the election was stolen from him and that he actually won the election by a landslide. Are the prosecutors right when they claim that Trump was telling a big lie, or in your judgment, did Trump actually win the election?
Counsel for the former president have 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
My judgment? Who asked that?
Bernie
My
Sanders.
It's irrelevant in this proceeding. It absolutely is.
Oh.
What's supposed to happen here?
Oh, my God.
The article of impeachment is supposed to be.
This guy is telling the Senate how to do their business?
Senators may not challenge the responses. The senators under the rules cannot challenge the content of the response. The counsel will continue.
Answer the fucking
question. Read again, please.
Oh, my God.
The House prosecutors have stated over and over again that President Trump was perpetrating a big lie when he repeatedly claimed that the election was stolen from him and that he actually won the election by a landslide. Are the prosecutors right when they claim that Trump was telling a big lie, or in your judgment, did Trump actually win the election?
In my judgment, it's irrelevant to the question before this body. What's relevant in this impeachment?
He doesn't get to do that.
Were Mr. Trump's words insightful to the point
of
violence? And riot.
Yes, they were.
That's the charge.
Yes, they were.
That's the question.
What more do you need to know?
The answer is no. He did not have speech that was insightful to violence.
This is
or
this.
Riot.
You know, they need. This is why they needed the chief justice there to preside over this, because Patrick Leahy is worthless.
Completely. From the beginning of this case.
So he sits up there and he's impugning the House managers. That's not okay. And Patrick Leahy needs to shut his ass up.
The question they brought before you, the question they want my client to be punished by. That's the questions that should be getting
He
asked.
Lied to his followers since the election,
the
before the election, and incited them to riot because they believed. Bullshit!
Patriotic
bullshit.
Protests.
Bullshit.
His words.
I object.
The House managers have showed zero evidence.
Nonsense.
That his words did anything else.
Oh my God.
All of the evidence is this was premeditated.
You're right, because he incited it. He built this up since before the election. Since before the election, he was telling people they were going to steal it.
In any way.
Then when he lost by 8 million votes, he's like, they stole it. And he got them all riled up to go to the Capitol and storm the building. And he's feigning outrage at the question?
The issue of contesting
elections
and the results... The Democrats have a long, long history of just doing that.
Oh, fuck you.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, because nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just
couldn't do anything else. I'm sorry.
Shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow.
Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
Bow, bow.
Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
All right. So, good. That's done. I can't believe he was allowed to do that. Cannot believe he was allowed
Senator
to do that.
Wisconsin. I couldn't see who was...
Understand. I sent a question to the desk for...
Oi, Ron time. Johnson? Really? Oi.
So go...
Okay. So we're waiting. Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. This is going to be a good one. You know, what's the point if they're not going to answer the questions posed? Bernie Sanders had a great response. I don't know who sang that Shut the Fuck Up song. I found it on
Senator from Wisconsin
online.
Sends a question for both counsel for the former president and the House managers.
Right.
Clerk will read it. And
Ron Johnson the, from the planet of QAnon.
Counsel for the former president will have the first 2.5 minutes.
Oh, boy.
The House managers assert that the January 6th attack was predictable and it was foreseeable. If so, why did it appear that law enforcement at the Capitol were caught off guard and unable to prevent the breach?
This goes to my question.
Why did the House Sergeant at Arms reportedly
turn
down a request to activate the National Guard, stating that he was not comfortable with the optics?
Yeah, because they were ordered to by the Secretary of the acting Secretary of Defense, because Trump replaced the Secretary of Defense, who wouldn't carry out his orders to keep away from the Capitol while his minions were invading it. This is where Jamie Raskin fucked up, because they did not explore that question, which I think is of paramount importance. Oh, read the question again, because this guy can't listen the first time.
The House managers assert that the January 6th attack was predictable and it was foreseeable. If so, why did it appear that law enforcement at the Capitol were caught off guard and unable to prevent the breach?
They were prevented.
Why did the House Sergeant at Arms
from doing their jobs?
Turn down a request to activate the National Guard, stating that he was not comfortable with the optics.
The optics. I'm surprised that question came
from
Ron Johnson.
Holy cow. That is a really good question.
Oh, my God. This guy is just horrible.
The House managers done their investigation, maybe somebody would have an answer to that.
Oh, my God.
But they didn't.
Ask your boss, the man who's not going to pay your legal fees.
They did nothing. They looked into nothing. They read newspaper articles.
How about telling us what you know instead of what you think they didn't do?
Something or another.
Wow.
But Jiminy Crickets, there is no due process in this proceeding at all.
Jiminy Crickets? You know what? You're unqualified to be here. So I got another song for you, buddy. You know, I may have to pull out another one just because he's going to ramble on for a few minutes.
They were presenting. Some law enforcement knew that something could be happening. In my presentation, we knew that the mayor 2 days before had been offered.
No, she asked for help. And she was turned down. The double talk here is insane. They're bringing gaslighting to a whole new level. Michael Van Der Veen, personal injury attorney. I got another song for you.
And why?
I want to tell you a story about the brand new world's biggest asshole. It's a brand new story about the brand
asshole.
His name is
Michael Van Der Veen.
And he's the new world's biggest asshole.
All right, and Stacey's back. So let's hear what Stacey has to say.
You're welcome to give it to us. We would love to see it. You've had an opportunity to give us evidence that
please bring it on. Go.
Haven't seen it yet. The defense counsel wants to blame everyone else.
Yep.
Except the person who is most responsible for what happened on January 6th. And that's President Trump. Donald Trump.
That's right.
And he is the person who foresee this the most. Because he had the reports. He had access to the information. He as well had, we all know how he is an avid cable news watcher. He knew what was going to happen. He cultivated these individuals. These are the undisputed facts. The National Guard was not deployed until over 2 hours after the attack.
Boom.
I heard reference to Mayor Bowser
in defense's presentation. Mayor Bowser does not have authority over the Capitol or federal buildings. She could not deploy National Guards to the Capitol. That is outside of the jurisdiction of the mayor of the District of Columbia. At no point in that entire day did the President of the United States, our Commander-in-Chief, tell anyone, law enforcement struggling for their lives, insurgents who felt empowered by the sheer quantity of them, any of us in this building, or the American people, that he was sending help. He did not defend the Capitol.
No, he did not.
The President of the United States did not defend the Capitol of this country. It's indefensible.
It is indefensible. And the acting Secretary of Defense,
Mr. President,
would not allow the National Guard to be deployed.
To the desk.
Did not allow them to be deployed. And the one who's unprepared and didn't do his homework is Vander Veen, the personal injury attorney. And I know that there are some good personal injury lawyers out there, but that's not who you hire to represent you when you're the president or former president being impeached. Just saying. Okay, I don't know who we're waiting for.
Senator Merkley,
Senator Merkley has a question.
For the House managers, the clerk
okay.
will...
Merkley, of a Democrat from Oregon.
If a president spins a big lie to anger Americans and stokes the fury by repeating the lie at event after event and invites violent groups to D.C. on the day and hour necessary to interrupt the Electoral College count, and does nothing to stop those groups from advancing on the Capitol, and fails to summon the National Guard to protect the Capitol, and then expresses pleasure and delight that the Capitol was under attack, is the president innocent of inciting an insurrection because in a speech he says, be peaceful?
Oh, great question from Jeff Merkley. Oh, let's give him, I'm sorry. I'm using, you don't know, I'm using so many screens. Here's my applause for Jeff Merkley's question. He deserves a standing ovation. All right, it looks like Julian Castro, or Joaquin Castro, I always get them mixed up, is coming up to answer. Congressman Castro of Texas.
You all ask a very important question.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, given everything that the president did leading up to the election, after the election, and leading up to January 6th, all of the incitement of his supporters, whom he convinced with a big lie over and over that the election had been stolen from them and from him, and then once the mob had stormed the Capitol, the vice president was in danger, the speaker was in danger, the members of the House and the Senate and all the staff here, the janitorial staff, the
mm-hmm.
cafeteria workers,
mm-hmm.
everybody.
Mm-hmm. They were all
and
in danger.
All of the hot rhetoric that he spoke with and then simply a few times said, stay peaceful.
Yeah, no, he said it once, actually.
Remember, he said, stay peaceful when they had already gotten violent.
Right.
When they'd already brought
after
weapons.
The toothpaste was already out of the tube.
When they'd already hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
What he never said was stop the attack. Leave the Capitol. Leave immediately.
Yeah. No, he never said it. Never said that. At one point, he said, go home. At the end, after it was
let me
pretty
be
much
clear.
Over. Go home with love.
The
we love you. You're special.
The president's message in that January 6th speech was incendiary. So in the entire speech, which was roughly 1,100 words, he used the word peaceful once.
Once. I told you.
And using the word peaceful was the only suggestion of nonviolence. And President Trump used the word fight or fighting 20 times. Now again, consider the context. He'd been telling them a big lie over and over, getting them amped up, getting angry because an election had been stolen from them. There's thousands of people in front of him. Some of them are carrying weapons and arms. They're angry. He's telling him to fight. And President Trump's words in that speech, just like the mob's actions, were carefully chosen. His words incited their actions. And how do we know this? For months, the president had told his supporters his big lie, that the election was rigged, and he used the lie to urge his supporters not to concede and to stop the steal.
Mm-hmm. That's what he did. Yeah. Here comes Jamie Raskin to clean it up.
And on the way out the door, you yell, respect private property. That's not a defense to robbing the bank.
Oh, touche. That's why I love Jamie Raskin. I love that.
Texas. Mr. President, I send a question to the desk directed at both sides.
Ted Cruz. Ugh. Really? I know the voice. I can hear it coming out of his dick nose. And he does have a dick for a nose. Next time you see him. Look, I'm sorry, because now you can't unsee it, but he does. Ted Cruz has a penis on his face where his nose is supposed to be. Go figure. Okay, so this process is so ridiculous. So Ted Cruz says, I have a question for both sides. So each side gets 2.5 minutes, but it takes 2.5 minutes to get to the damn question.
Question for
both sides. Come on, Patrick.
Read it, and the House managers will go first for 2.5 minutes.
Okay, question, please. The clerk shall read the question.
Out of their 16 hours, the House managers devoted all of 15 minutes to articulating a newly created legal standard for incitement.
What?
One.
What?
Was violence foreseeable? Two, did he
figures this is
violence?
A Ted Cruz question.
Three, did he do so willfully? Is this new standard derived from the criminal code or any Supreme Court case?
Oh, my God.
While violent riots were raging, Kamala Harris said on national TV, they're not going to let up, and they should not. And she also raised money to bail out.
Oh, fuck you. All right, so here's the dictionary. I don't need to hear Ted Cruz's question. Dictionary definition of insurrection. See, I've got my dictionary right here. It's always right by my side. I know I've got a computer here. I can look on the computer. I'm old school. I've got a real dictionary. And it's the American Heritage Dictionary of the English Language. An insurrection, an act of open revolt against civil authority or a constituted government. Insurge, to rise up. By the way, insurgent, rising in revolt against civil authority or a government in power, one who revolts against authority. Sounds like an insurrection by a bunch of insurgents to
me. Obviously, it's completely irrelevant to the proceeding at hand, and I will allow her to defend herself. The president's lawyers are pointing out that we've never had any situation like this before in the history of the United States, and it's true. There's never been a president who has encouraged a violent insurrection against our own government.
Never.
So
never.
We really have nothing to compare it to. So what we do in this trial will establish a standard going forward for all time. Now, there are two theories that have been put before you, and I think we've got to get past all of the picayune little critiques
you
that
think?
Have been offered today about this or that. Let's focus on what's really at stake here. The president's lawyers say, echoing the president, his conduct was totally appropriate. In other words, he would do it again. Exactly what he did is the new standard for what's allowable for him or any other president who gets into office. Our point is that his incitement so overwhelms any possible legal standard we have that we've got the opportunity now to declare that presidential incitement to violent insurrection against the Capitol and the Congress is completely forbidden to the President of the United States under the impeachment clauses.
Yes.
So we set forth for you the elements of encouragement to violence, and we saw it overwhelmingly. We know that he picked the date of that rally. In fact, there was another group that was going to have a rally another date, and he got it moved to January 1st. He synchronized it exactly with the time that we would be in joint session. And as Representative Cheney said, he summoned that mob, he assembled that mob, he incited that mob, he lit the match. Come on, get real.
Hello.
We know that this is what happened. And the second thing is the foreseeability of it. Was it foreseeable? Remember Lansing, Michigan, and everything we showed you. They didn't mention that, of course. Remember the MAGA 2 march, the MAGA 2 rally. They didn't mention that. Violence all over the rallies. The president cheering it on, delighting in it, reveling in it, exulting in it. Come on, how gullible do you think we are?
Really?
We saw this happen. We just spent 11 or 12 hours looking at all the evidence. And intent and courage.
Time,
you go, Jamie Raskin. Yeah, he's great.
Counsel for the former president.
He sounds as pissed as I am.
Really? Senator Cruz, I believe the first part of your question.
This is the Senator Cruz. This is the question you coached me on when you and Lindsey Graham and Mike Lee came to meet with us yesterday while the Democrats were giving their case, which we didn't pay attention to, because you were coaching us on how to present a defense. So thanks for the coaching on this question. That's what he should be saying. Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, and Lindsey Graham met with these so-called lawyers yesterday to tell them how to present their case. This is a kangaroo court.
The use of violence. In other words, it has to be in the words itself, which is clearly
bullshit.
In the words itself. That's step one. They don't get past it. Two, the speaker intends that his speech will result in use of violence or lawless action. There's no evidence of that, and it's ludicrous to believe that would be true. Third, the imminent use of violence or lawless action is likely to result in speech. Also, they fail on all three points.
No, you fail on every point.
We know it and needs to be applied here. I don't know why he said he never heard Kamala Harris.
Kamala! It's Kamala! You intentionally mispronounce her name. It's Kamala. It's not that hard. It rhymes with Mamala.
We played it three times today. We gave
yeah,
it
we
you
know
audio.
You played it three times
it to
today.
You and you got it in video.
Oh,
that's
my
what she
God.
Said. But it's protected speech.
Oh, my God.
Her speech is protected also, Senator. That's the point. You all have protections as elected officials. The
highest. Oh, yes, we need the personal injury lawyer to lecture Congress on what's protected speech. Go home and chase a fucking ambulance.
And that's what you need to keep focused on. You need to keep focused on what is the law and how do we apply it to
oh,
this
really?
Set of facts.
Yeah, right, because that's what you care about. All you've done is lie since you've been there because you're employed by a guy who's not going to pay you, by the way, who all he does is lie.
On what is the issue before you decide it based on the law, Brandenburg and Bible believers, and apply it to the facts.
Oh, my God.
And that requires you to look at the words. And there were no words of incitement.
Oh, bullshit. Everything he said was a word of incitement for not only, since the election, but before that. By the way, while we're waiting, enjoy Ted Cruz's dick nose if you're watching on video. All right, who's this next question from? It'll be a Democrat because the last one was from Dick Nose Cruz. There it is. You'll never look at it the same way again.
The senator from Washington, Senator Murray, has a question for the House managers. The clerk will...
Patty Murray of Washington. Okay.
At 6:01 p.m. Eastern Time on January 6th, President Trump tweeted... These are the things that happen when a sacred landslide election victory is so unceremoniously and
that's what he said after the riot.
Away
this is
from
what happens.
Patriots who have been badly and unfairly treated for so long.
That's what he said.
Adding for rioters to go home
with
love and in peace.
Right.
What is the relevance of this tweet to President Trump's guilt?
What is the relevance of the tweet, period? Telling them to go home with love? Please. And remember this day forever. She left that part out. remember this day forever, he said, because it's something, what, to be proud of? Yeah, you killed a fucking cop and four other people and caused two more cops to commit suicide.
Up to 5 minutes.
God. They're letting Jamie Raskin just do it. Is this Jamie? Right, or is this...
Senators, this was...
Oh, it's Joaquin again.
And a key statement by the president that day. That horrific day.
Yep.
Remember, the Capitol had been stormed. It had been attacked. People had yelled, hang Mike Pence. People had gone after Speaker Pelosi. People brought baseball bats and other weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Many members of Congress and the Senate and the House were fearful for their own lives. The president didn't call the National Guard. His own administration didn't list him as somebody that they had spoken with to activate the guard. And he said, remember this day forever. So if he was not guilty of inciting this insurrection, if this is not what he wanted,
yeah,
if it wasn't what he desired, by that time, the carnage had been on television for hours.
Yeah, it had.
He saw what was going on.
Apparently, gleefully watched it.
If it wasn't what he wanted, why would he have said, remember this day forever? Why commemorate
remember this day forever? He said that. Gleefully.
On the U.S. Capitol, for God's sake. Why would you do that? Unless you agreed that it was something to praise, not condemn. Something to hold up and commemorate. No consoling the nation, no reassuring that the government was secure.
Nope.
Not a single word that entire day condemning the attack or the attackers or the violent insurrection against Congress. And this tweet is important because it shows two key points about Donald Trump's state of mind. First, this was entirely and completely foreseeable, and he foresaw it.
Yep.
And he
incited it
over many months.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, I told you this was going to happen if you certified the election for anyone else besides me. And you got what you deserved for trying to take it away from me. And we know this because that statement was entirely consistent with everything he said leading up to the attack. Second, this shows that Donald Trump intended and reveled in this. Senators, he reveled in this. He delighted in it. This is what he wanted.
He's making a great
remember
point here.
Remember this day forever, he said. Not as a day of disgrace as it is to all of us, but as a day of celebration and commemoration.
That's right. That's how he treated it. He thought
and
it was great.
If we let it, if we don't hold him accountable and set a strong precedent, possibly a continuation later on. We will, of course, all of us remember this day.
I knew it.
But not in the same way that Donald Trump suggested. We'll remember the bravery of our Capitol and Metro police forces. We'll remember the officer who lost his life. And sadly, the others who did as well. And the devastation that was done to this country because of Donald Trump.
So James Holman, a columnist for The Washington Post, just tweeted, Ted Cruz was seen coming and going during the break before this Q&A into the room where Trump's defense team was holding. The senator's question about the legal standard for incitement and the rehearsed answer that followed were clearly coordinated in advance. Told you. You know, something. It's just so obvious. It's so obvious. It's obvious that these Republicans in the Senate are going to put party and their political aspirations above the country, above the well-being of the people of the United States of America. And that's shameful. Every last one of them should be voted out of office. Every last one of them.
The senator from Louisiana, Mr. Cassidy, has a question
boy.
For both.
And Cassidy,
for the former president,
has apparently changed course and is now in favor of acquittal.
The House, the clerk will read it, and counsel for the former president will go first for 2.5 minutes. And then the House representatives will have 2.5 minutes.
All right, what's the question? Oh, I didn't hear it. I was talking over it.
Senator Tuberville reports that he spoke to President Trump at 2:15 p.m. He told the president that the vice president had just evacuated. I presume it was understood at this time that rioters had entered the Capitol and threatened the safety of senators and the vice president. Even after hearing of this at 2:24 p.m., President Trump tweeted that Mike Pence lacked courage. He did not call for law enforcement back up until then. The tweet and lack of response suggests President Trump did not care that Vice President Pence was endangered.
That's true.
Or that law enforcement was overwhelmed. Does this show that President Trump was tolerant of the intimidation of Vice President Pence?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Counsel has 2.5 minutes.
Can you repeat the question, please?
Directly, no. but I dispute the premise of
bullshit.
Your facts. I dispute
the
facts that are laid out in
really?
That
then
question.
Then call Tuberville and to testify, or Tuberville, or however you say
we're
his stupid
know
name.
The answer to the facts.
Really? What? How about calling him? How about
because
calling
the
him?
The House did nothing to investigate.
Has nothing
what went
to
on.
Do with the House.
We're
this is
to
the
get
trial.
Hearsay from Mr. Tuberville. There was hearsay from Mr. Lee, I think.
Oh,
it was
my God.
2 weeks ago, and
then have him testify.
Mr. Lee was accused of making a statement that he never made. But it was a report from a reporter, from a friend, as somebody who had some hearsay that they heard the night before at a bar somewhere.
I just need you to
I mean, that's
shut
really the
fuck
kind
up,
of evidence that the House
you,
has brought before
I need you to
us.
Shut the fuck up, bitch.
And
shut
so
the fuck up,
I have a problem
shut,
with
shut
the
fuck up, bitch.
Facts
shut the fuck up, bitch.
In the question. I have no idea. And nobody
shut
from the House
up,
has given us any opportunity to have any idea. But Mr. Trump and Mr. Pence have had a very good relationship for a long time, and I'm sure Mr. Trump...
He was rushed out of the room by the Secret Service because he was life was threatened. People were chanting, hang Pence, and Trump tweeted out an incendiary tweet about him.
Part of the House representative.
Oh, my God. Jamie Raskin. You go, Jamie. Here we go.
You know, my counsel said before... This has been my worst experience in Washington, and for that, I guess we're sorry, but man, you should have been here on January 6th.
No shit. Boom!
So the counsel for the president keep blaming the House for not having the evidence that's within the sole possession of their client, who we invited to come and testify last week.
Yep.
We sent a letter on February 4th. I sent it directly to President Trump,
yep,
inviting him to come and to explain and fill in the gaps of what we know about what happened there. And they sent back a contemptuous response.
Yep, they did.
Just a few hours later, I think they maybe even responded more quickly to my letter than President Trump did as a commander-in-chief to the invasion.
Oh, a lot faster.
And the storming of the Capitol.
He didn't respond.
But in that letter, I said, you know, if you decline this invitation, we reserve all rights, including the right to establish a trial that your refusal to testify supports a strong adverse inference. What's that? Well, Justice Scalia was the great champion of it. If you don't testify in a criminal case, it can't be used against you. Everybody knows that. That's the Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination. But if it's a civil case and you plead the Fifth or you don't show up, then according to Justice Scalia and the rest of the Supreme Court, you can interpret every disputed fact against the defendant. That is totally available to us. So, for example, if we say the president was missing in action for several hours and he was derelict in his duty and he deserted his duty as commander-in-chief, and we say that as inciter-in-chief he didn't call off the dogs, and they say, oh no, he was really doing whatever he can, if you're puzzled about that, you can resolve that dispute, factual dispute, against the defendant who refuses to come to a civil proceeding. He will not spend one day in jail. If you convict him, this is not a criminal proceeding.
That's right.
This is about preserving the public, dear Senate.
Yes.
That's what this is about.
Please listen to him.
Setting standards of conduct for the President of the United States so this never happens to us again. So rather than yelling at us and screaming about how we didn't have time to get all of the facts about what your client did, bring your client up here and have him testify under oath about why he was sending out tweets denouncing the vice president of the United States while the vice president was being hunted down by a mob that wanted to hang him and was chanting in this building, hang Mike Pence. hang Mike Pence. Traitor, traitor, traitor.
Time of the manager.
Case closed. He's convicted. He's guilty. What more do you need?
West Virginia.
Mr. President, I send a question to the desk, directed to the House managers.
All right, so who is this from? I lost track already. Sorry, I'm getting a little worked up. By the way, I know Jen Taub was supposed to be here, but they were supposed to break for dinner at 5. So if they break, she'll come over. If not, we'll do it next week because we'll have a lot to talk about. And she's dealing with a sick dog,
West Virginia
too.
Has a question for the House managers. The clerk will report.
Would the president be made aware of the FBI and intelligence information of a possible attack? And would the president be responsible for not preparing to protect the Capitol and all elected officials of government with National Guard and law enforcement, as he did when he appeared in front of the St. John's Episcopal Church?
Good question. I guess this is Manchin's question. Oh, Stacey again. All right, you go, girl.
It's the responsibility of the president to know.
Yeah, it is. And he knows. All he does is watch TV.
Our commander-in-chief gets daily briefings on what is happening in the country that he has a duty to protect.
She said duty.
Additionally, the president would have known, just like the rest of us know, all of the reports that were out there and publicly available. How many of you received calls saying to be careful on January 6th? To be careful.
All of them.
I'm seeing reports. It doesn't seem safe. How much more the President of the United States? Donald Trump, as our Commander-in-Chief, absolutely had a duty and a sworn oath to preserve, protect, and defend us, and to do the same for the officers under his command. And he was not just our commander-in-chief. He incited the attack. The insurgents were following his commands, as we saw when we read aloud his tweet attacking the vice president. And with regard to the vice president, I'm sure they did have a good relationship. But
did,
we all know
being
what
the operative word.
One who has a good relationship with the president mm-hmm. when you decide to do something that he doesn't like. I'm sure some of you have experienced that when he turns against you after you don't follow his command.
That's right.
You heard from my colleagues that when planning this attack, the insurgents predicted that Donald Trump would command the National Guard to help them. Well, he didn't do much better. He may not have commanded the Guard to help them, but it took way, way too long for him to command the Guard to help us.
He didn't command the Guard, though.
This is all connected. We're talking about free speech. This was a pattern and practice of months of activity. That is the incitement. That is the incitement. The activity he was engaged in for months before January 6th, not just the speech on January 6th. Mm-hmm. All of it in its totality is a dereliction of duty of the President of the United States against the people who elected him, all of the people of this country.
There you go. This whole thing is such a farce. And if I'm sounding a little irreverent, it's because it's the only way to react to this.
Mr. President, send a question to the desk for the former president's counsel.
The former president, it must have been a Democrat, because, you know, the Republicans are not allowed to say former president. They have to call him the 45th president. Mr. Tix, I don't think there are any truths sprinkled in there for effect or any other purpose. By the defense, talking to a chatter in the YouTube room. Okay. Again, they could
Senator
make this
Alaska,
go a lot more
Senator
quickly.
Senator Sullivan has a
Senator
question
Sullivan.
For the House counsel, and the clerk will report the question.
Sullivan is a Republican, and he called him the former president. Ooh, someone's not going to be happy.
Mr. President.
For the former president's counsel. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Mr. President.
The House manager said yesterday that due process is discretionary, meaning the House is not required to provide, and indeed did not provide in this snap impeachment, any constitutional protections to a defendant in the House impeachment proceedings. What are the implications for our constitutional order of this new House precedent, combined with the Senate's power to disqualify from public office a private citizen in an impeachment trial?
Counsel has 5 minutes.
That's a complicated question. Could I have that read again, please?
Again, because he needs everything read twice to him.
The House.
Pay attention, Vander Veek, or whatever your name is.
Due process is discretionary, meaning the House is not required to provide, and indeed did not provide in this snap impeachment, any constitutional protections to a defendant in House impeachment proceedings. What are the implications for our constitutional order of this new House precedent, combined with the Senate's power to disqualify from public office a private citizen in an impeachment trial?
Well, first of all, due process is never discretionary. Good Lord. The Constitution requires that an accused have the right to due process because the power that
he had due process
has,
he could have come and testified.
Liberty.
They're not taking your liberty. This is not a criminal trial. This guy knows nothing about constitutional law or impeachment. Nothing. I'm not a lawyer. I don't even play one on the radio, and I know more than he does.
What they just tried to do was say that it's our burden to bring them evidence to prove their case. And it's not. It's not our burden to bring any evidence forward at all.
All right, so shut up. Go home.
What's the danger?
Just to end the charade.
The danger is pretty obvious. If a majority party doesn't like somebody in the minority party, and they're afraid they may lose the election, or if it's somebody in the majority party and there's a private citizen who wants to run against somebody in the majority
party. Yes, he is seriously a personal injury attorney, answering a question from the chat room.
And of course, without due process, they're not going to be entitled to a lawyer. They're not going to be entitled to have notice of the charges against them. It puts us into a position where we are the kind of judicial system.
You know what? I have a new quick ditty from our friend Bruce W. Nelson. I think this would be a really good time to hear it. So let's hear it, Bruce W. Nelson, because I can't listen to this guy anymore. Here we go.
Of it. I hope next time you run for office, you are told to get. So put your feet up, Josh, you repulsive little zit.
We'll be safe.
Told you it was a quick little ditty, and he's still talking, and you didn't miss a beat.
To bring an impeachment proceeding without any,
little
again,
zit.
Without any investigation at all, and then stand up here and say, one, they had a chance to bring us evidence. And two...
Oh, he's still going.
Let's see what we can do about flipping around somebody's...
Isn't it 5 minutes yet? Come
to
on.
To having a lawyer or to having... to see the evidence at all It just gets brought in without anybody, as it was here, without anybody. He's
approaching the caster opening statements from Monday, where, you know, we heard, did you ever notice when they talk about you, they call you my senator? It's like the My Pillow guy. He's the My Senator guy. He's just talking to fill the 5 minutes. This is embarrassing. The whole thing is embarrassing. The whole Donald Trump is embarrassing. The fact that he was in the White House for 4 years is fucking embarrassing.
Institutional, because it violates.
He's still talking.
I'm not even going to get into the.
My God, this is the longest 5 minutes in history.
The due process part should be enough to give anybody who loves our Constitution and loves our country great pause to do anything.
All right, at least that got him off the stage.
Mr. President,
these senator from Connecticut.
Isn't it time for dinner yet?
And I send a question to the desk for the House managers.
Okay. This is Blumenthal, I think. From his voice, it sounded like Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut. And that's really sad that I can recognize these senators by their voice. But now we wait 3 minutes until the question goes to Leahy, and then Leahy gives it to the clerk, and the clerk reads it.
The senator from Connecticut, Senator Blumenthal, has a question for the House managers, and the clerk will report the question.
Okay. Anytime now.
Former President Trump and his attorneys have cited the Brandenburg v. Ohio case in support of their argument
that
the First Amendment protects Trump.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
Did the Brandenburg case prohibit holding public officials accountable through the impeachment process for the incitement of violence?
The answer is no. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Jamie Raskin, good. Okay. I'll sit back for this one.
So
he's smiling.
Let's start with the letter of more than 140 constitutional law professors, which I think they described as partisan in nature. That's a slur on the law professors, and I hope that they would withdraw that. There are very conservative luminaries on that list, including the co-founder of the Federalist Society,
yep.
Ronald Reagan's former Solicitor General, Charles yep. Fried, as well as prominent law professors across the intellectual, ideological, and jurisprudential spectrum. And they all called their First Amendment arguments frivolous, which they are. Now, they've retreated to the position of Brandenburg versus Ohio. They want their client to be treated like a guy at the mob, I think they said, a guy in the crowd who yells something out. Even on that standard, this group of law professors said there's a very strong argument that he's guilty even under the strict Brandenburg standard. Why? Because he incited imminent lawless action, and he mm-hmm. intended to do it, and it was likely mm-hmm. to cause it. How do we know it was likely to cause it? It did cause it. They overran the Capitol, right? So even if you want to hold the President of the United States of America to that minimal standard and forget about his constitutional oath of office, but as I said before, that would be a dereliction of legislative duty on our part. If we said
duty.
All we're going to do is treat the President of the United States like one of the people he summoned to Washington to commit insurrection against us, okay? The President swore to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. That's against all comers.
Yep.
Domestic or foreign, that's what ours says, right?
Right.
Did he do that? No, nope. On the contrary.
Nope.
He's like the fire chief. He doesn't just say, go ahead and shout fire in the crowded theater. He summons the mob and sends the mob to go burn the theater down. And when people start madly calling him and ringing the alarm bells, he watches it on TV. And he takes his sweet time for several hours. He turns up the heat on the deputy fire chief who he's mad at because he's not making it possible for him to pursue his political objectives. And then when we say, we don't want you to be fire chief ever again, he starts crying about the First Amendment. Brandenburg was a case about a bunch of Klansmen who assembled in a field, and they weren't near anybody such that they could actually do violent damage to people. But they said some pretty repulsive, racist things, but the Supreme Court said they weren't inciting imminent lawless action because you couldn't have a mob, for example, break out, the way that this mob broke out and took over the capital of the United States of America. And by the way, don't compare him to one of those Klansmen in the field asserting their First Amendment rights. Assume that he were the chief of police of the town who went down to that rally and started calling for, a rally at the city hall.
Uh-huh.
And then nurturing that mob, cultivating that mob.
Really good analogy.
Pulling them in over a period of weeks and days, naming the date and the time and the place, riling them up beforehand, and then just saying, be my guest. Go and stop the steal. Come on. Back to Tom Paine. Use your common sense.
There you go.
Use your common sense. That's the standard of proof we want. They're already treating their client like he's a criminal defendant. They're talking about beyond a reasonable doubt. That they think that we're making a criminal case here.
It's not
friends,
a criminal case.
The former president is not going to spend 1 hour or 1 minute in jail. This is about protecting our republic and articulating and defining the standards of presidential conduct.
That's
and
all.
If you want this to be a standard for totally appropriate presidential conduct going forward, be my guest. But we're headed for a very different kind of country at that point.
He's fucking awesome. He's just so good. I could listen to Jamie Raskin all day, and you'll notice I didn't cut him off except to say, oh, he said duty, because I'm a child.
I send a question to the desk.
I guess they're not breaking for dinner at 5, because it's 5:56. Question is, do I keep going, or do I, make it a weekend? And we may have to do this again tomorrow. We may have to have a special broadcast tomorrow because they're going to be at this again tomorrow. So I'm telling you now, YouTubers, I'll probably fire up the machine when they start and be here because I've got to watch it anyway.
Kansas, Mr. Marshall has a question for the counsel for the former president. The clerk will read the question.
The House manager's single article of impeachment is centered on the accusation that President Trump singularly incited a crowd into a riot. Didn't the House managers contradict their own charge by outlining the premeditated nature and planning of this event?
No, because he was in it, on it from the beginning.
The crowd was gathered at the Capitol even before the speech started. And barriers were pushed over some 20 minutes before the conclusion of President Trump's speech.
Have you ever heard a really stupid question? Because that was one. Oh, my God. Yeah, I'll stick around. So, Progressive Voices people, if you want to stay tuned, we're going to keep going. The live stream is at NicoleSandler.com/listen-live. You can come to YouTube or listen to the audio stream.
The premeditated nature and planning of this event, and by also showing the crowd gathered at the Capitol even before the speech started, and barriers were pushed over some 20 minutes before the conclusion of Trump's speech.
So
the answer
what?
Is yes. And I want to take the rest of my time
God,
to go back
no.
to the last question because
really?
It was completely missed by the House managers.
Oh, my God.
Brandenburg v. Ohio is an incitement case. It's not an elected official case. That's Wood and Bond. And the whole problem that the House managers have in understanding the First Amendment argument here is that elected officials are different than everybody else. He's talking about fire chiefs.
Oh, God. I just can't. All right. Everybody, sing
police
along.
Police officers aren't elected officials.
Shut the fuck up. Nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch.
Should
we hear the Josh Hawley Put Your Feet Up song
lives?
Again?
That's wicked important stuff. And you should be free to talk about that in just about any way that you can. Brandenburg comes into play from a constitutional analysis perspective.
Analysis?
When you're talking about incitement.
A constitutional analysis?
Is the speech itself insightful to riot?
Yes, it was. Everything he said. Everything he said for 4 years.
The answer here is no. In Brandenburg, through, again, Bible believers.
I think we need to hear Bruce Nelson again. Bruce W. Nelson, that is.
Of the speech. You actually can't go outside the words of the speech. You're not allowed to in the analysis.
I just can't.
Smarmy little twit. I've seen entitlement before, and you're the face of it. I hope next time you run for office, you are told to get. So put your feet up, Josh, you repulsive little zit.
All right, see, I told you. And he's still talking. Put your feet up, Josh, you repulsive little zit.
That elected officials and fire chiefs are treated differently under First Amendment law.
Oh, please.
And that's to the benefit of you all, which is to the benefit of us all. Because we do want you to be able to...
I guess I could go with the laugh track.
...fear that the majority party is going to come in and impeach you, or come in and prosecute you, to try to take away your seat where you sit now. That's not what the Constitution says should be done.
Okay, he's done? Are you done?
But yes, they do. They do contradict themselves, of course. Thank you.
Oh, God. Is it over yet? Please let it be over.
Mr. President.
The Senator from Maryland.
Oh, no.
I send a question to the desk for the House managers.
I was hoping for a dinner break. Yeah. No. No such luck. Could I provide a link to Shut the Fuck Up, Bitch? I will post it on the blog at NicoleSandler.com with today's podcast. This is from Chris Van Holland of Maryland.
The managers, the clerk will report the question.
Would you please respond to the answer that was just given by the former president's counsel?
That was the best question of the day. Chris Van Hollen, who knew? I'm glad I stayed just for that alone. And Jamie Raskin, please. Oh, yes, it's Jamie Raskin who's going to answer.
Mr. President, thank you. I'm not quite sure which question the senator was referring to, but let me quickly just dispense of the counsel's invocation again of Bond versus Floyd. This is a case I know well, and I thank him for raising it. Julian Bond was a friend of mine. He was a colleague of mine at American University. He was a great civil rights hero. And in his case, he got elected to the Georgia State Legislature. And is a member of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the great committee headed up by the great Bob Moses for a long time. He got elected to the Georgia legislature, and they didn't want to allow him to be sworn in. They wouldn't allow him to take his oath of office because SNCC had taken a position against the Vietnam War. And so the Supreme Court said that was a violation of his First Amendment rights not to allow him to be sworn in. That's the complete opposite of Donald Trump. Not only was he sworn in on January 20th, 2017, he was president for almost 4 years before he incited this violent insurrection against us, and he violated his oath of office. That's what this impeachment trial is about, his violation of his oath of office and his refusal to uphold the law and take care that the laws are faithfully executed. Please don't desecrate the name of Julian Bond, a great American, by linking him with this terrible plot against America that just took place in the storming of the U.S. Capitol. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Ms. Plaskett.
All right, we're double teaming us.
Thank you. Let's just be clear. President Trump summoned the mob, assembled a mob, lit the flame. Everything that followed was his doing.
Those are Liz Cheney's words.
Immediately and forcefully intervened to stop the violence, he didn't. In other words, this attack would not have happened without him. This attack is not about one speech.
Hello.
Most of you men would not have your wives with one attempt at talking to her. It took numerous tries. You had to build it up. That's what the president did as well. He put together the group that would do what he wanted. And that was to stop the certification of the election so that he could retain power to be president of the United States in contravention of an American election.
Enough said. Mic drop. It's over. Stop already. Unless you want to call witnesses. How about we call some witnesses? Start with Tuberville.
The senator from Florida.
I send a question.
Oh,
to
God, Marco Rubio, please. I may have to sing Shut the Fuck Up, Bitch myself to Marco Rubio. Hi, Marco Rubio. Little Macro, we call him. He's the guy who talks out of two sides of his mouth at the same time. He is the definition of weasel. He is, his picture is in the dictionary. Here, I can pull it up for you. If I look up weasel.
The question from the senator from Florida, and it is to both sides. The clerk will read the question, and the House managers will go first for the first 2.5 minutes.
Weasel. Any of various carnivorous mammals with a long, slender body.
Voting to convict the former president would create a new precedent that a former official can be convicted and disqualified by the Senate.
New precedent?
Therefore, is it not true that under this new precedent, a future House
not a new precedent.
Facing partisan pressure to lock her up
oh, God.
Could impeach a former Secretary of State
Oy.
And a future Senate be forced to put her on trial and potentially disqualify from any future office?
You know, this is the problem with them, the Republicans, is because this is a legitimate case. Donald Trump incited this insurrection at the Capitol. We had an armed mob invade the Capitol trying
the
to kill
go first.
The vice president. And the Speaker of the House. It's different from saying, ooh, lock her up, Hillary Clinton, we don't like her. But they don't get the difference, which is really frightening. Weasel, by the way,
President,
says
Senators,
Marco Rubio.
Three quick points here. First of all, I don't know how many times I can say it. The jurisdictional issue is over.
Thank you.
It's gone.
Yes.
The Senate settled
Done.
It. Done. The Senate entertained jurisdiction exactly the way it has done since the very beginning of the Republic. In the Blunt case, in the Belknap case. And you'll remember both of them, former officials. And in this case, we have a president who committed his crimes against the Republic while he was in office. He was impeached by the House of Representatives while he was in office. So, you know, the hypothetical suggested by the gentleman from Florida has no bearing on this case because I don't think you're talking about an official who was impeached while they were in office for conduct that they committed while they were in
Hello.
Office.
Boom. Mic drop. But they don't listen to what he's saying. He has all the answers.
The president has 2.5 minutes.
Oh, boy.
Thank you. Could I have the question read again?
Of course, because Van Der Veen needs the question read every fucking time.
Voting to convict the former president would create a new precedent that a former official can be convicted and disqualified by the Senate. Therefore, is it not true that under this new precedent, a future House facing partisan pressure to lock her up could impeach
why are you asking
Secretary
him he doesn't know the answer
the Senate
he's an ambulance chaser
and potentially disqualify from any future office
I don't know
if you see it their way yes if you do this
you notice how he looks
done,
over to the he's only looking at the Republican side of the room when he answers he only talks to
example
his people
former Secretary of
this
State
is just unbelievable
but it could happen to a lot of people. And that's not the way this is supposed to work.
Oh, my God.
And not only could it happen to a lot of people, it'd become much more regular, too.
I wonder if I have anything else I can play when he's
but
talking.
I want to address that, and I want you to be clear on this. Mr. Raskin can't tell you on what grounds you acquit. If you believe, even though there was a vote that there's jurisdiction, if you believe jurisdiction's unconstitutional, you can still believe that. If you believe that the House did not give appropriate due process in this, that can be your reason to acquit.
Oh, fuck you.
If you don't think they met their burden in proving incitement, that these words incited the violence,
I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch.
But the original question is an absolutely slippery slope that I don't really think anybody here wants to send this country down.
No, you already did that. Oh, my God. Okay, is it time to break yet?
Mr. President, I send a question to the desk.
Oi. All right, who is this?
The senator from Colorado sending
Colorado. Oh, it's Frackin' Looper. Frackin' Looper. Okay. Oh, shit. They've got to put it up. I'm going to find another song to play because, you know, we all know Shut the Fuck Up, Bitch by heart by now. I do have another one somewhere. Let me see.
And I would note just for the, as the hour tends to get late.
Yes.
I would note for
it's past
all,
Patrick Leahy's bedtime.
Counsel.
Yeah.
As Chief Justice Roberts noted on January 21st, 2020,
yeah,
citing the trial of Charles Swain in 1905, all parties in this chamber must refrain from using language that is not conducive to civil discourse.
Ooh.
The
Who said something they shouldn't have?
Senator from Colorado, Senator Bennett has a question for
Oh, it's
House
Senator Bennett. It's not Frackin' Looper.
We'll read the question.
Okay. Senator Bennett from Colorado.
Since the November election, the Georgia Secretary of State, the Vice President, and other public officials withstood enormous pressure to uphold the lawful election of President Biden and the rule of law. What would have happened if these officials had bowed to the force President Trump exerted or the mob that attacked the Capitol?
Okay. Who's this question for? Oh, the impeachment managers, the Democrats. All right. Now they're huddling to see who's going to answer. Who gets this one? I just want you to shut the fuck up. Nobody asked you, bitch. Da-da-da-da. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Sorry, I'm trying to fill time. You know, and it's overtime now. So, you know, I'm technically off the clock. This is when I usually indulge in the medical marijuana, but because I still have to talk to you, I won't. I guess while we're waiting, you know, I do have another song, but I don't want to step on the impeachment managers, but they are looking through paperwork. All right. When they step up to the mic, I'll pause the music. But here is a Boca Brittany Summers original.
You sit down on my face and the sound comes out my mouth.
Oh, sorry. I'm Joaquin Castro, everybody. We'll pick it up from there in a minute.
I want to take a minute and remind everybody about the incredible pressure that Donald Trump was putting on election officials in different states in this country and the intimidation that he was issuing. I want to remind everyone of the background of Donald Trump's call to one Secretary of State, the Secretary of State from Georgia, Mr. Raffensperger. Donald Trump tried to overturn the election by any means necessary. He tried again and again to pressure and threaten election officials to overturn the election results. He pressured Michigan officials, calling them late at night and hosting them at the White House. He did the same thing with officials in Pennsylvania. He called into a local meeting of the Pennsylvania legislature, and he also hosted them at the White House, where he pressured them. And in Georgia, it was even worse. He sent tweet after tweet attacking the Secretary of State until Mr. Raffensperger got death threats to him and his family. His wife got a text that said, quote, "Your husband deserves facing a firing squad." Firing squad.
Yes, this really happened. This is not funny.
Mr. Raffensperger stood up to him. He told the world that elections are the bedrock of this society, and the votes were accurately counted for Donald Trump's opponent. Officials like Mr. Sterling warned Trump that if this continued, someone's going to get killed.
Yep.
But Donald Trump
someone did.
He escalated it even further. He made a personal call. You heard that call because it was recorded. The President of the United States told a Secretary of State that if he does not find votes, he will face criminal penalties. Please, senators, consider that for a second. The President putting all of this public and private pressure on election officials, telling them that they could face criminal penalties if they don't do what he wants. And not just any number of votes that he was looking for. Donald Trump was asking the Secretary of State to somehow find the exact number of votes Donald Trump lost the state by.
Yep. Interesting.
Remember
how that works.
President Biden won Georgia by 11,779 votes. In his own words, President Trump said, quote, "All I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes." He wanted the Secretary of State to somehow find the precise number plus one of votes that he needed to win. As a Congress and as a nation, we cannot be numb to this conduct. If we are, and if we don't set a precedent against it, more presidents will do this in the future. This will be a green light for them to engage in that kind of pressure and that kind of conduct. And this could have gone a very different way if those election officials had bowed to the intimidation and the pressure of the President of the United States. It would have meant that instead of the American people deciding this election, President Trump alone would have decided this American election. That's exactly what was at stake, and that's exactly what he was trying to do. He intended, wanted to, and tried to overturn the election by any means necessary. He tried everything else that he could.
And he still won't admit that he lost.
He started inciting the crowd, issuing tweet after tweet.
Yep.
Issuing commands to stop the count, stop the steal, worked up the crowd, sent a save the date. So it wasn't just one speech or one thing. He was trying everything.
Everything.
He was pressuring elected officials.
Everything.
He was riling up his base, telling them the election had been stolen from them.
From him.
It had been stolen from him.
From him.
It was a combination of things that only Donald Trump could have done.
That's right. And he did.
And for us to believe otherwise is to think that somehow a rabbit came out of a hat.
Yep.
And this mob just showed up here on their own, all by themselves.
Yeah, right.
This is dangerous, senators. And the future of our democracy truly rests in your hands.
I had that standing by all day because, you know, he's the law and order president, so I figured
President,
I needed to share it
with
you.
The senator from Texas.
Oh. President, I send a question to the desk.
This is Cornyn. It's not Dick Nose Cruz again. It's Cornyn, the other senator from Texas. Probably should have been Beto O'Rourke, but, you know, he had to run for president instead of taking on the ancient senator from Texas. I don't get it. Maybe I should play the Sit on My Face song again. All right. I guess we will. Here we go.
Whenever you sit down on my face, the sound comes out my mouth. Whenever you hear that silly little sound, that's my...
What's he saying? Oh, sorry. And see, now
the House managers have argued that if the Senate cannot convict former officers, then the Constitution creates a January exception, pursuant to which a president is free to act with impunity because he is not subject to impeachment, conviction, and removal and or disqualification. But isn't a president subject to criminal prosecution after he leaves office for acts committed in office, even if those acts are committed?
Yes, so they should also charge him criminally for what he did. This is separate and apart from that. One doesn't preclude the other. And I think, I don't know why he hasn't been arrested yet. Arrest his ass. Or as they would say, lock him up.
The senator from Texas' question raises a very, very important point. There is no such thing as a January exception to impeachment. There is only the text of the Constitution which makes very clear that a former president is subject to criminal sanction after his presidency for any illegal acts he commits. There is no January exception to impeachment. There is simply a way we treat...
No, they're trying to make it so.
Misdemeanors.
And what the January exception is, what they're talking about is that a sitting president, a lame duck, who has, you know, been voted out, but before the inauguration of the new guy, can do whatever he wants because there's no way to hold him accountable. That's what they have put into effect without codifying it. Now they're saying by clearing him, that will codify it.
Wouldn't a president who decides to commit his crimes in the last few weeks in office, like President Trump, inciting an insurrection against the counting of Electoral College votes, be subject to criminal prosecution by the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, for example, the Department of Justice? Well, of course, he would be. But that's true of the president, regardless of when he commits his offenses in office. In other words, that's an argument for prosecuting him if he tried to stage an insurrection against the union in his third year in office or his second year in office. You could say, well, he could be prosecuted afterwards. The reason that the framers gave Congress, the House, the power to impeach, the Senate, the power to try, convict, remove, and disqualify was to protect the Republic. It's not a vindictive power. I know a lot of people were very angry with Donald Trump about these terrible events that took place. We don't come here in anger, contrary to what you've heard today. We come here in the spirit of protecting our republic.
Hello.
And that's what it's all about. But their January exception would essentially invite presidents and other civil officers to run rampant in the last few weeks in office on the theory that the House and the Senate wouldn't be able to get it together in time. Certainly, according to their demands for months and months of investigation, wouldn't be able to get it together in time in order to vindicate the Constitution. That can't be right. That can't be right. We know that the peaceful transfer of power is always the most dangerous moment for democracies around the world. Talk to the diplomats. Talk to the historians. They will tell you that is a moment of danger. That's when you get the coups. That's when you get the insurrections. That's when you get the seditious plots. And you know what? You don't even have to read history for that. You don't even have to consult the framers. You don't even have to look around the world. It just happened to us. The moment when we were just going to collect the already certified electoral...
Oh, no. Damn it. C-SPAN does this to me. I'm carrying this on C-SPAN. And they constantly say, are you still there? Yeah, we're still here.
C-SPAN,
we're still, okay, we know.
Proudly true to our mission
right.
for
Thanks,
40
C-SPAN.
Plus years.
All right, yeah, come on, give us back Jamie Raskin.
And we got hit by a violent insurrectionary mob.
Sorry about that.
Don't take our word for it. Listen to the tapes, unless they're going to claim those are fabricated too. And the people are yelling, this is our house now. And where are the blank votes
time
at?
Time is up.
And show us the votes, et cetera. Thank you.
Okay, isn't it time for a dinner break?
Majority leader?
Yes. Come on, Chucky. Dinner break. Dinner break. We're
Mr.
hungry.
President,
here we go. Come
it's
on.
My understanding there are no further questions on either side.
Yay.
The Republican leader?
That's correct. I know.
That's correct. There are no more questions.
I ask unanimous consent that the time for questions and answers be considered expired.
Thank you.
Without objection, so ordered.
Now, Mr. President,
let's call witnesses.
I ask unanimous consent that it be in order for myself and Senator McConnell to speak.
Aye.
For up to 1 minute each.
Oh, one, okay, 1 minute each.
For me to make a unanimous consent to request as if in legislative session.
Without objection, so ordered. The senator from New York.
Thank you, Mr. President. And, Mr. President, in a moment, I will ask the Senate to pass legislation that would award Capitol Police Officer Eugene Goodman the Congressional Gold Medal. In the weeks after the attack on January the 6th, the world learned about the incredible, incredible bravery of Officer Goodman on that fateful day. Here in this trial, we saw a new video, powerful video, showing calmness under pressure, his courage in the line of duty, his foresight in the midst of chaos, and his willingness to make himself a target of the mob's rage so that others might reach safety. Officer Goodman is in the chamber tonight. Officer Goodman, thank you.
Thank you, Officer Goodman. He saved Mitt Romney's life. Mitt Romney should give him millions of dollars because Mitt Romney has millions of dollars. Hey, Mitt, give him millions of dollars. Well, he deserves the standing ovation and much more. I hope they gave him a huge raise.
Republican
leader
McConnell.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Oh.
I just want to say, I think we can all agree that Eugene Goodman deserves the highest honor Congress can bestow.
It's all good, man.
But I just, before we move to pass this legislation, I want to be clear that he was not alone that day. The nation saw and has now seen numerous examples of the heroic conduct of the Capitol Police, the Metropolitan Police, the SWAT teams that were with us on January 6th here in the Capitol protecting us. Our heartfelt gratitude extends to each and every one of them, particularly now as members of the force continue to bear scars, seen and unforeseen, from the events of that disgraceful day. Let us give them all the honor and recognition they so justly deserve.
Ah, Empty Wheel just pointed out something good. On top of giving Goodman the recognition he deserves, we all got to see which seats were empty in the chamber. And there are a number of empty seats in the chamber. They haven't been doing crowd shots because they're not allowed to during the trial, but I guess in this case they can. And many members are missing.
Mr. President.
The Republican leader.
Please join the majority leader's request. January 6th was a day of fear for those who work here in the Capitol and of sadness for many more watching.
You think?
From afar. But that awful day also introduced our nation to a group of heroes whom we in Congress were already proud to call our colleagues and to whom we owe a great debt. In the face of lawlessness, the officers of the U.S. Capitol lived out the fullest sense of their oaths. If not for the quick thinking and bravery of Officer Eugene Goodman, in particular, people in this chamber may not have escaped that day unharmed. Officer Goodman's actions reflect a deep personal commitment to duty and brought even greater distinction upon all his brave brothers and sisters in uniform. So I'm proud the Senate is taking this step forward, recognizing his heroism with the highest honor we can bestow.
Okay. So they're admitting that they needed protection from this mob who attacked the Capitol. They just won't admit that dear leader ordered them to do it.
Legislative session, I ask unanimous consent that the Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs be discharged from further consideration of S-35 and then at the Senate proceed to its immediate consideration.
Without objection. And the clerk will report.
S-35, a bill to award a congressional gold medal to Officer Eugene Goodman.
Oh, unanimous consent.
Without objection, the committee is discharged. And the Senate now proceeds to the measure.
Mr. President, I ask unanimous consent that the Van Hollen substitute amendment, which is at the desk, be considered and agreed to. The bill, as amended, be considered read a third time and passed.
Yes.
And the motions to reconsider be considered made and laid upon the table.
Without objection, so ordered.
Now, Mr. President, I ask unanimous consent the trial adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Saturday, February 13th. And that this also constitute the adjournment of the Senate.
Okay.
Without objection.
Without objection. Go away. All right, then. I guess we're adjourned until 10 a.m. Eastern tomorrow. I'll be watching it anyway, so we'll do it here. Come on back and join me. You'll be able to watch on my YouTube channel, on Facebook Live, I think on Periscope, although I don't think it fired today. However, thank you all for hanging with me today. I hope my little distractions weren't too annoying. I hope they made this easier to digest in some form. What a shit show this has been. Thanks for listening, everybody. I will see you tomorrow. More power to us all. Or as Brad Friedman ends his show, good luck, world. We really need it. See ya.